the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
The Sound Off Podcast. The podcast about broadcast with Matt Cundall. Starts now.
This week I'm reconnecting with my good friend Mike Gorrell. You know, one thing that the internet age has allowed us to do is become good friends without seeing one another. That's kind of the way it's been for Mike and I. I think we've met once. You see, you can have these incredibly collaborative relationships with people over the phone and through writing and sharing files back and forth. And it was something we got good at long before the pandemic made it necessary. Mike Gorrell is a voice you hear on television as an imaging voice or a narrator. He's on cartoons and, of course, radio.
Jason Aldean is giving you a chance to live like a country superstar.
You like the way that sounds?
You bet your sweet ass.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jason Aldean. I've teamed with The Wolf to help make that happen.
Listen to Memphis's new country, the all-new 94.1 The Wolf, all this week at 7 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. for a chance to head to Nashville. And stay at the brand new Omni Hotel. The Wolf is on the loose.
Now, Mike is someone I haven't spoken to in a long time, so I figured it's time we catch up. And he joins me from Phoenix, Arizona.
Mike Gorrell, this is your life, you know?
This is it, man. This is it. It's what I've been doing for, gosh, man, I met you in 2014, but I've been doing this since like 2000, like doing it seriously since 2000.
You are way off on the dates. I'll set you straight. Don't worry.
We met in 2006.
I was fired in 2014.
I remember that.
How many podcasts have you been on?
Two. This is literally the second one I've ever been on as a voice guy.
Why did you ever want to be a voice guy?
Because they made more money than what I was doing. I was doing production at a CHR station in Toronto. Some of the listeners might remember Energy 108. And it was a great gig. I mean, it was awesome. It was like a dream come true. But I was like fresh out of college. And I mean, you know, your first gig, you're not going to get paid six figures or even close to that. I mean, I don't know what people get paid today, but I wasn't making six figures. I just left home. I didn't have any money. Like I literally was eating lettuce and sardines for dinner every night because I moved in with some buddies. I'm going to date myself now as far as real estate and rent terms, but I got a deal renting a room in a buddy's house for $350 a month. And I was like, hey, I'm taking it. Like I had to leave home. I stayed home till I was 23. And so I left and I just gotten this gig. Like I just graduated out of college, a 3-year college program at Centennial doing radio and TV. And radio was like in my blood. It's all I wanted to do. And I got this production gig and I dealt with the voice guys. Because I do like imaging sessions with the VO guys and they just always sounded like they had a lot more money than I did. You know, they chose their own hours. They drove nicer cars. They seemed to live in nice neighborhoods. They were all down in the US at the time. One of them is no longer living. I think he passed away. Bumper Morgan was one of them.
Get ready for a chance to win $5,000 every weekday instantly. The $5,000 cash bribe only on Magic Oldies 105.7.
And man, he was on like 100 some odd stations back in the day. And it was so inspiring. He was a really cool guy. He was a nice guy, real humble guy. Like he would always take the time to speak to people. And I would just pick his brain and ask him, like, what do you do, man? And then there's another guy who was amazing too. And you probably know Dude Walker. Do you know Dude Walker?
No.
No? Dude's the man, man. Look him up. Dude Walker.
Thursday, October 9th on ABC. Get ready for Life on Mars, an ABC series premiere. Jason O'Mara is New York detective Sam Tyler.
I'm
driving in a red place, but it must have been a wrong time.
A modern day cop caught in another time. What he knows is how to solve crime. What he doesn't know is why he's here. ABC's Life on Mars premieres Thursday, October 9th, 10, 9 central on ABC.
Dude became our voice after Bumper. And I talked to Dude like, no joke, like 6 months ago. I hadn't talked to him in years. I haven't talked to him since I moved to the U.S. But I kept in touch with him over the years. And Dude, he was another one, man. He was just a really cool guy, really solid at his craft, knew what he was doing. And I just wanted, to do what he was doing. I didn't have his voice and I still don't, but, it was just fun, man. It was cool being around these guys. You know, the internet was very early then. We didn't have Source Connect and things like that, but we used ISDN lines. And so there'd just be ISDN sessions. I'd be recording these guys multiple times a week and I just thought, what a cool way to make a living. Like these guys are sitting at home. I think Dude was working at a station, not working at a station. He was using the studios at a station in Maryland where he was living at the time. And eventually he moved to a home studio and everything was just from home. So here are these guys, and Kundal, you know this, you're at home working in a studio and like, what's better than that, right? Like that's a good life if you can pull it off. It's not for everybody. Like, I mean, it can be a little isolating at times. I'm talking a lot here, dude. Do you want to chime in?
No, but that's how this podcast works. Like people are like, oh, I love you on your podcast. And I go, I just ask questions and people just talk.
All right. Well, if you get sleepy, just tell me.
But I'm curious, what do you do to break up that monotony, like by working at home? Because everybody has their strategy.
Yeah, I go outside. I mean, I live in a sunny climate, which I've always wanted to do. I didn't grow up in a sunny climate, as you know. And I just go outside. I mean, the sun shines here and you know, you've been down this way. The sun shines a lot here. And so I get outside. Thankfully, I live in a quiet neighborhood. So, you know, my backyard's peaceful. It's quiet. It's somewhat private and I can just sit back there and chill, man. And that's important. I just get outside. I get out of my surroundings. I might take a walk. I might go biking, but I just, sometimes I need to unplug and just recharge my batteries. And if I spend like 30 minutes, 45 minutes outside, come back in, I just feel refreshed. So that's what I do just to break up the monotony. Sometimes we don't have a choice, right? Like you might have a busy day and you know this, you might have script after script. You told me you're tracking a bunch of stuff this morning. So that happens. But yeah, that's what I do mostly.
You're kind of the perfect guy to be doing this because you were working at the radio station, but you already came in with some acting background. So hence the term voice actor. So did you ever want to be a personality on the radio or just with your acting background, you went sort of straight, you just sort of were lured into voice?
I was more lured into voice. Like I tried being on the air and I hated it. And I didn't want to tell my PD at the time, who was a solid dude, love him, Scott Turner, but I thought maybe it's just me. Like maybe I need it because this is what I always wanted. I wanted to be on the air. And when I got that chance to be on the air, I don't know, man. I didn't enjoy it. And I don't know why. I wasn't feeling it. What I liked doing was hanging out in the production room. When I was, a part-timer and interning, I would hang with the production directors more. I could sit in the on-air studio. That's where most of the normal interns wanted to hang out. But I wanted to go to the production room and see what they were doing. I loved watching people produce imaging and promos and commercials and those things. And hearing the voice guy, they'd be in the live session. I would just sit there and just think, this is so cool, man. Like, I want to do this. But Scott Turner was awesome. He gave me opportunities to get on the air. I did a bunch of swing shifts and I wasn't feeling it. And I thought something was wrong with me at first. I'm like, why don't I like this? Like, I've been listening to the radio since I was a kid and I've always wanted to be on the air. And then when I had that chance, something inside me just, it didn't mesh. And I had studied acting. And so that's been helpful in my craft, working with different acting coaches. I went to some acting schools when I lived in Toronto. I've done workshops I've done them in Toronto. I've done them in New York. I've done them in LA. I've done them in Phoenix. So I've worked with a variety of different coaches, actors, even directors that put on workshops for actors, casting directors, different types of people. I definitely find, and I don't know what your experience is, but I find that that really enhances the craft. Like you have to train, you have to treat it like a sport. You can't just go on and read copy without working at it and treating it as a craft. And I think a lot of us make that mistake in the beginning. I'm not speaking for you. I'm speaking for myself. I didn't really put that together. And I just thought, well, I'll just read copy and sound like balls to the wall, which I never had. I never had those pipes. I spent the first 10 years of my career trying to sound like something that I couldn't do, trying to sound like a dude walker or, you know what I mean? Like a boomy guy. But after so much time, you start realizing this is not where I'm going to excel. And you better excel when you just get comfortable with who you are, just as in any situation in life. And so I accepted the fact that I have a mid-range sound and I've got to just focus on that and work on that aspect of what I can do, because I can't do the big boomy stuff. I don't have that big boomy voice.
I went to audition for a radio network as their classic rock person, and I left with the adult contemporary job.
Hey, you left with a gig.
I know.
That's awesome. And less growling if you're doing adult contemporary. That's easier, isn't it? Like with rock, you got to do the edge. It's more, no, am I wrong?
No, you're exactly right. But it goes to your point. You think you're this, but then somebody will tell you, you know what? You're really this.
Yeah. And it's natural for you to try for the rock station because that's your background. You worked in some monster rock stations in some major markets. And so, of course, you would go to that. But it's funny that you end up getting a different format than what you aimed for. But you walked out with a gig. That's the main thing. I mean, that's awesome. I have worked with different voice coaches. Right now, I'm working with an acting coach who hasn't done a lot with voiceovers. It's kind of new to him. So it's been an interesting experience because I'm sort of giving him the highlights of how my world is. And he's relating what he's used with actors to what I need to apply to my craft, if that makes sense. So we're kind of in this sort of unique way. We're learning from each other, but he's really good. And he's been helpful. He's sort of crafted his own approach. He's based in LA. And yeah, at the time of this podcast, I'm working with him and I love what he does.
You moved from Toronto. I believe you moved to Los Angeles. Was that the allure of Hollywood? And then you found your way to Arizona?
Yes. Yeah, that's what happened. So I went to LA my first time back in 98 because I'm an old man. There's probably people listening to this podcast who were born in 98. And I was already like an adult.
I just hired a producer this morning who was born in 98.
Really?
Yeah. Taylor, her first job is actually going to be to edit this podcast.
But that just to me sounds like a kid. I'm so old, dude. It's crazy. Yeah. I went to LA to visit a friend who had just moved there, who was from Toronto. But yeah, I went to LA in 98 to visit a friend from Toronto who had worked in the studio and music industry. And he bought a house in the Hollywood Hills. It was amazing. I mean, it was like literally under the Hollywood sign. And I mean, it was the vacation of a lifetime. I went down there for like 10 days. Rob is a really talented musician, composer, producer. The guy can do anything. The guy's awesome. And so he moved to LA. He said he went down there once. He drove across like Sunset Boulevard, like from way, way East LA all the way to where it ends, right at the Pacific Ocean. And he fell in love with it. And he just knew he had to go live there. And the same sort of thing happened to me. I went down there. I went to visit with him, with another friend, Dan Tuchek. Dan's the man, man. I love Dan. So Dan and I went down there. And I don't know if that was Dan's first time there. It might not have been because Dan's a lot more traveled than I ever will be. But we went down there and it was just awesome. I mean, there's just an energy of LA, especially if you've never been there. There was this energy that like, oh, I gotta live here. I gotta come here. And so that sat in me for, man, my math is terrible, a little over 15 years, but I always had in the back of my head, I think I want to move that way. So we went down there. I come back just inspired and fired up. You probably know this. When you work in media and entertainment for so many years and you go to New York or LA, it's crazy. Like it's transformative. Have you not found that, or is it just me? Even Chicago, right? Like Chicago's not like LA or New York, but there's still like an energy and a fire to it. And the radio is always sounding awesome. the local TVs, everything's amazing, right? Like everything's nicely packaged and everything's sort of like setting the trend for the rest of the country. That's always how I've seen LA and New York radio. Am I wrong?
No, absolutely right. I mean, I think one influences the East, the other one influences the West. I just find that when it comes to voiceover, that there's more opportunity in Los Angeles for somebody who is versatile like yourself. And I think back to the experience that Jamie Watson had when he went to New York and with what he told me, with what he was looking for versus those who I find in Los Angeles. I'll use Tara Sands as an example because she's been on this podcast before, but to delve into anime and cartoons and video games, that's not something you're going to get everywhere other than Los Angeles. You'll get the odd one in New York, but you're going to get all of them out there.
Yeah, that's true. There just seems to be more there. There is a lot in New York. There's a lot like on the, for voice, like there's a lot on the cable side. If you're voicing promos and stuff, there's definitely a body of work there, but LA seems to have a lot of animation and stuff like what you're saying. So that wasn't really how I was seeing it at the time. I just wanted to go somewhere a little warmer. That was my thing. So as much as I love New York, but New York temperatures are, they're a little better than Toronto. Not much, but a little better. I can remember going there in the wintertime from Toronto and it would be like 15, 20 degrees cooler sometimes. So there is that sort of warmer air coming off the ocean in New York versus frigid Toronto. But yeah, LA, you know, it has the beach. It's got the sunshine year round. I mean, that was the draw. So that's what I wanted to do. And so my wife is awesome. She was on board. She knew that was something I was always fired up about. And there was just this point where I was approaching 40 and I just said to her, we're not getting any younger. We're either going to do this or we're not. Because if we wait 10, 15 years, we're probably not going to want to make this move. This is a big move. It's a huge move. And three kids, two young kids at the time. And when we started the process, I started the process with the immigration lawyer and it was like official. And I paid the retainer or deposit or whatever it was. Dude, I didn't sleep for like 6 months. I was terrified. Like every night, I was like, what if this blows up in my face? Like, what if my kids hate it? Like, what if we don't like it? What if we move to an area that we don't like? Like, there's all these big what ifs, right? All this fear. Like, we lived in this safe suburban Toronto community for so many years and, you know, we were comfortable. And this just midlife sort of transition into the uncomfortable and the unknown. It was terrifying, but it was also very exhilarating. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, it was wild. So we just started the process and it took like 18 months of like paperwork. I literally had to hire somebody to put the immigration paperwork together to gather work credits and stuff because the type of visa that I applied for requires like work experience. And so I literally had a woman like updating my IMDb page and all this stuff because it was just so overwhelming. And she went through my resume and she was like calling people because you have to get all these referral letters. I don't know what the process is like now, but it was the legal team I worked with was very knowledgeable and they knew exactly what they had to do, but there was just so many documents. I think the final PDF for the application with all the career highlights and whatever else they had to include was like, I'm not kidding. It was over 600 pages. Like it was insane. It was like a book. And like, that was my whole life, like in the 600 pages. Like it was crazy.
How do you turn 4 IMDb credits into 600 pages?
No kidding, dude. They went for everything, like just involvement in award shows, professional associations, different things like that. I had to get a letter from my union, which they weren't hard things to do, but it was just a lot of phoning people and clerical work, which I was in over my head. And so I literally paid this amazing woman to help gather all this stuff. Like this was her thing. She knew how to grab all this stuff. And so, yeah, it was just overwhelming. And then finally got the approval and yeah, we moved. We went to seek out a neighborhood. I wanted something safe and kind of quiet. We went to Thousand Oaks. Are you familiar with Thousand Oaks?
No. But I've heard of it. I just don't know where to find it on the map.
It's like west. It straddles the LA County line. It's technically Ventura County. So I know there's certain people in LA will go, well, that's not LA. You know what I mean? Whatever. It's LA area. Greater LA to me. And it was a good community. It was quiet. It was peaceful. But I don't know. We stayed there a year. Our rent was ridiculous, like insane. And it'd probably be worse. I know it would be worse now, but we had an 1100 square foot apartment, beautiful apartment, like great area, safe, gated, all that. But it was an 1100 square foot apartment for five of us. And one of them was a baby. And so like our daughter, who's our oldest, and our middle son shared a room, and it was fun for 6 months. And then they just like,
did they make rent?
They did. Yeah. They did very well. They attended a school that was nearby and they made friends very quickly. That wasn't the issue. It's just sharing a room in this tight space was difficult for them because our daughter was a little bit older. She needed a little more room. You know what I mean? She couldn't even change in her own room because her brother's sitting right there. Like it was awkward for them. And I know people share bedrooms all over the place. I know this is like a first world problem thing, but it was a tight space and we were paying an astronomical amount of rent and we were looking at houses and I don't know, just something wasn't sitting right. It wasn't feeling like we had to be in LA. I think at one time you did have to be in LA and I still think there's benefits of being squarely in LA. But for us, it was cool that I was there, but more and more of the auditions that were coming in would give an option. So you can be in the studio or you can work remotely. And every audition I get now says that. So if you're based in LA, you can go to the studio. And if you're not based in LA, you just use Source Connect. That's basically everything that comes in. So geography, I feel, and maybe somebody else has a different opinion, but I feel that geography is a lot less relevant right now.
Did you find that the pandemic sped that up a little bit?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it was already happening before the pandemic, but definitely. I mean, that shut the whole world down. So the pandemic only fueled it. And now we're in this, I think we're in a culture now where that's not going away. I think we're always going to have the option to record remotely. I think it's easier for a lot of producers now, and I think they're taking advantage of it. Source Connect is so simple and it's so reliable. It's such an amazing program to use and it's easy. I mean, anyone can figure it out. You literally just download it and click it. So I think Source Connect has changed that world and it's not expensive. Like ISDN, did you ever have an ISDN line?
Not me personally, but I'll tell you a story about a voice talent here in Canada whose wife is a record rep. And she said to me, my husband put in an ISDN line. Is this a necessary expense? And I said, it's the year 2000. Yes, this is a necessary expense and he needs it. But I'm glad they're gone. And I think there was a point for radio stations that we started to get rid of them. And there were other things like Tyline and other ways to get, you know, voice back to the radio station that didn't involve a bill of $400 a month from the phone company.
Yeah, totally. It was crazy. I held off as long as I could, but there was just some opportunities that were coming up when I was in Toronto in the early 2000s where I needed ISDN. So we're going back to, I want to say 2007, 2008.
Which is around the time we met, by the way.
Is that the time we met? So I've known you longer than I think.
Yeah, so we met 2007, roughly, when Jamie Watson came on as the voice for Power 97. And you and him were working together. I don't even know what your relationship was like. I don't know how he brought you into the fray, but all of a sudden, I'm going to Mike's house to record stuff tonight. And I don't know if you guys have a party or what's going on, but the audio would come back and it'd be fantastic. And I go, hey, look what they came up with. Because I think you guys were writing our promos at the same time.
Yeah, I contributed to the creative. So Jamie. Jamie's the man, and I know you have a very high opinion of him too. You can't not have a high opinion of Jamie Watson. I mean, he's one of the kindest souls I've ever met in this industry, and I miss him because I used to see him more than I do now because we don't live as close to one another as we used to. So Jamie used to record his stuff at my studio. I didn't live too far from him at the time, and he hadn't taken that plunge into getting his own home set up. as time goes on, that's getting easier and easier. So most VO guys can figure that out. Most actors who want to do VO can figure that out now. But at that time, it was still more difficult. And so Jamie, because he was so busy, he was like running around all the time, doing auditions, bookings, like he was so in demand. And I imagine he still is. I'm not in the Toronto scene as much now. So I just don't know. I'm not as plugged in as I used to be, but Jamie was so in demand and he would just record a lot of his radio stuff at my studio. And I didn't mind that. I mean, it was cool. So yeah, he would be at my house and we would actually bang out promos together and we'd brainstorm stuff and he'd bounce stuff off me and I'd recommend things and we did stuff. We did custom morning pieces for, at the time, Dean Blundell was doing The Edge. And so we did stuff for them and that, like, we had a lot of fun. We banged out some really fun stuff. And I don't even know where half of it is. I'd have to look through my archives, but there's so much material that we put together and he cranked out a lot of that stuff. That's when we met. Now it's all coming to light, man. Now it's all coming to light. We've known each other longer.
In a world that praises beauty and rewards beauty out of hand for its sheer visual splendor, 102.1 The Edge invites you to the Art Contest. Wait a minute, what just happened there? Did I just get beeped? What's the deal there? The contest. For the love of... The contest. We lost the sound or something. Something happened to the sound there. Let me try it again. The Edge presents the contest. No, that's still not working. Well, I hope we get it up and running by Wednesday morning when Dean, Jason, and Todd announce the contest for real. You know, stay tuned, because the Edge contest is coming. Damn! Well, that's just frustrating. The contest. Oh! Oh, crap! It's gonna be a lot of fun. It'll be something so unique. The contest. Crap!
The contest.
Nope, it's not working for either.
Coming soon on 102.1.
I was starting to think it was me.
The Edge.
Wheeler and Hal were recipients of some of that stuff as well. So if you wrote stuff for Dean, some of it would make its way out west and we would use it. And I don't know what it was. I'd throw a promo at Jamie. You guys would work with it. And I remember the kicker line that came back, which was your line, was
a juice box.
A juice box. Those were the words. So, you know, somebody must have been wound up about that. So now every time somebody gets wound up, I go over and I ask them, can I get you a juice box?
I love it.
But I do remember it was your line. And it was your contribution to the bit and it made the whole bit. But I still, all this stuff I still carry today, like these little one-liners. And I just go up to people now who are having meltdowns. And, you know, people are having meltdowns all over the place now trying to get on airplanes and I don't want to wear a mask and all this stuff. And I go, do you need a juice box?
That's the ultimate calm, a juice box. I think I vaguely, do I remember that? I think I vaguely remember that because, yeah.
And why wouldn't you say that? Because you've got these three kids who all require one.
Exactly. Like that's the remedy. Forget medications. Just get juice boxes. They're cheaper. It was fun, man. I mean, Jamie's process was so, and still is, so unique. Like he'd come with something written and some notes. Like I don't even know if he typed it. Like I think he would just handwrite it and I couldn't read his writing. Maybe he shouldn't have been a doctor. I don't know. I couldn't read his writing. And then he would just scratch stuff off and he would completely alter whatever he had in mind half the time and just go into something. He was just so creative and he had so many tools in his toolbox that he could just pull out and like dialects.
Now here's an example of what would get worked on. Jamie Watson sent this to me for episode 63 where he was featured and I didn't use it in that episode, but it's something that Mike and Jamie concocted one evening. Mike mentioned to Jamie that he saw Ed Asner playing an irritable senior character on Curb Your Enthusiasm. They swapped the other character on the show for Jamie and preserved Ed Asner's performance, then created this imaging piece for Q107 in Toronto.
Hi, welcome to Q107. Would you like to have a seat?
Yeah, in a minute. I'm a little puzzled. What's this outfit? Is it a Halloween party or what is it?
Oh, well, it's, you know, casual Fridays at Q107.
Casual Friday, what does that mean?
Well, casual, like we do at home.
But you're not at home.
Well, it's not 1939, so this is casual Friday.
Yeah, I know, and you told me that already. What do you do on Casual Friday?
Well, we play a lot of rock music, you know, Zeppelin, The Who. Now, most days are casual, but Fridays are extra casual.
I don't like it.
Listen, it's Casual Friday. We just do it once a week. It's not a big deal.
I don't give a damn if it's half a day a week. I don't like it.
Well, we wouldn't treat you casually.
Then why the hell you dress that way?
It's a radio station.
I want you to be on cutting edge, man,
well, no,
whenever you're handling my business.
I am really sorry.
You should be sorry because you just lost my account.
So does that mean you're not going to listen?
Son of a bitch.
Do you call me son of a bitch?
Every day's Casual Friday.
Don't Q107 button.
On cue.
He was the one guy I worked with for so many years. He recorded at my place and I heard his voice all the time, several times a day, sometimes all day, because I would image stations. Back when I did production, I would image stations with Jamie's voice on them. So I was like, I was just inundated with Jamie. And he would do a commercial in his agency work that I'd hear on television or something. I think the commercial was Red Bull. And I couldn't tell if it was him. Like, that's how talented he was. Most people can tell if it's me or someone that sounds like me. A lot of us have identifiable sounds where people can pick us out and, hey, I heard you on so-and-so and whatever. But with Jamie, you'd always have to ask him, did you do a Red Bull commercial? Did you do this? Because he just had such an ability to transform his cadence and just the way he spoke and his patterns of speech, all that, to the point where you couldn't even recognize him anymore. And that's talent, man. That's like raw talent. I don't think a lot of people can do that. Even some of the best in the VO biz, they can't do what Jamie does. Guy's incredible. Guy's like a genius.
And way ahead of his time, because the stuff that he was doing for the radio stations at Chorus are the exact same things that a number of iHeart stations and a few other companies are using. I mean, I think of Alt 98.7 in Los Angeles and the rock station in Chicago that he's on right now. They want an imaging person, but they're getting away from the, you know, the straight read and the balls to the walls liner people. And they're bringing in people like Jamie who can be versatile and drop in a line and go off script and then work with a producer, you know, like Stax at Z100, who will bring it to life and make the whole thing pop.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Think of it, man. He's an imaging director's dream because you come to him with creative and then he just brings all this additional creative. It's like having a writer on staff, and he's witty and he's charming and he's funny. He's so funny. You spend hours just laughing with that guy. I mean, it's awesome. I definitely agree with you, ahead of his time. I mean, that's more of a trend now. We're seeing more of that personality-driven imaging that at one time didn't really exist. It was just straight voice guys, and it's definitely evolved. And he was doing that like 20 years before it was cool.
Okay, personal story. I'm program director at Power 97. Jamie and I would, you know, just be talking on the phone about stuff like radio and life. And I told him my day and what was going on at the station. Told him the record rep was going to be coming by tomorrow with the new AC/DC. I think our listeners are excited about the song and the concert. And by the end of the day, without prompting,
imaging and production for radio made easy from Megatrax Production Music. Add a sense of British flair to your productions with London's No Sheet Music. From the team behind Wise Buddha, No Sheet Music are musicians and music fans. It's as simple as that. Their albums range from contemporary to classical, orchestral to electronic, and they're always usable and sonically excellent. Don't miss the hottest sounds by adding Deep East music to your deal. Music from Deep East elevates a story and amplifies a message with a serious buzz. Always fresh and intuitive, and of course, the highest quality. They've always got their ears to the ground for the latest worldwide trends. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
Just before we start the show, I want to thank Matt Fogarty, one of our great supporters, who is the imaging voice for great radio stations like Froggy 99.9 Fargo, North Dakota, MyFM, which can be heard across Ontario, and the legendary Oz FM in St. John's, Newfoundland. If you want to have Matt Fogarty be a part of your station, reach out to him at mattfogartyvo.com. This would show up in my email box.
Power. How will the new AC/DC get to Power 97? The lights will flicker eerily.
Electrical sparks will fall from the ceiling.
Light bulbs will explode.
Pop, 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 pop.
like that, the station will grow quiet. A foreboding glow from under the door, and the doorknob will ever so slightly turn. And the door will swing open slowly. And a doorknob from the record label will come in and tell us he's got the new AC/DC CD. And that'll be cool. The new AC/DC arrives first to Power 97 in mere days. Power 97.
In just a second, more with Mike, and we talk about voiceover and acting. Also, why he moved to Arizona. And naturally, we talk about some of the cuisine of the region. Also, the difference between being a voice actor and an announcer. And the evolution of radio imaging. Just sit there. Be pretty. Don't, like, be not pretty.
The Sound Off Podcast with Matt Kundle.
Do you image any radio stations now, and have you changed your approach to maybe how you did it back in the middle part of the last decade?
Definitely. Yeah. I still do some imaging now. I always say this, I'm the jack of all trades and master of none. So I do some imaging work. I do some affiliate work doing news promos. I do some network stuff. I'm not a specialist in any genre, but I seem to have my hands in different things, which I suppose is a good thing. I've definitely tried to refine my craft. I try to be more conversational. I try to understand the script more academically than I used to. I think when I first started doing imaging, it was all about, and I don't know if you fell into this trap when you started voicing, Matt, but the cosmetics of it. How does it sound? You know what I mean? Like, do I sound good? Was that smooth? Do I need to say that word again? You know what I mean? Like, all that weird stuff that you do early in your career to try to emulate what everybody else sounds like. And then there comes a point where you realize in your career that that's not working, and you need to be who you are and comfortable in your own skin. And then the focus came more towards script interpretation, which is not always difficult. I mean, if you get a news promo for something, you know, you do it and you make sense of what it is. Sometimes commercials a little trickier because there's more, might be more slants in the writing and different ironies and things built into it. If it's a comedic script or whatever it is, versus just doing a standard promo for, you know, maybe a music promo or something for a radio station. But I've tried to bring that to the table. For sure. And I've been fortunate because I do medium and small market stuff more than major market stuff these days. It's just seems to be where I get the most opportunities. I've had some of these stations for a long time, so I suppose they like what I'm doing. They haven't fired me yet. That day will come. No contract is forever, right? You know that.
No, it all ends. Everything ends, Tony. Everything ends. One of the things I wanted to sort of zero in on, because I think you're really good at this, and this goes back to your acting background, and that's taking direction. This is something I am not good at because I was program director, where I was always giving direction. So then to have to flip and start taking direction made me very agitated. What does this director know anyway? Why is he telling me what to do? What's going on exactly? So I'm not good at taking direction. What do I need to do to be better at taking direction?
I have to say it depends who's directing you. Because not everybody who's directing you is necessarily a good director. I've been in situations where, and this is not the norm, these are isolated situations, but I've been in situations where I could sense the director didn't really know what they were doing, and they were just hoping that I would come up with the magic. And so there's definitely some pressure attached to that. But I think you have to, if you're talking about live sessions, you have to get into the writer's intention. So whoever wrote that script, I'm assuming the people directing you wrote the script or had a hand in writing the script. That doesn't always happen, especially with ad agencies. Sometimes 12 people write one script, right? But you want to really zero in on the writer's intention and give them what they want. And I'm not saying this for you. I mean, it's different, but I used to direct, and some guys, And again, Matt, I'm not pointing fingers at you. I love you. You're the man. But some guys that I've directed when I was younger didn't want to be directed. They felt their way was better and they didn't want to take direction from me. And I was 22 years old. So what do I know? You know what I mean? I'm this stupid kid telling them how to do their job, which I get. I mean, that might be difficult if you're a vet and you've been doing something for a long time. But at the end of the day, I mean, the way I look at it, I try to approach it humbly. They're paying you to do a job. Just give them what they want. That's how I approach it. And so I think as announcers, maybe we have to take the ego out of it sometimes because that can overtake you. And I've seen that ruin careers. Like there are voice guys that have been so difficult to work with that no matter how good they sound, there's always somebody ready to take our gig. You know that, and I know that. I mean, there's no shortage of voice guys. And so I think we have to park that sometimes and just give the writer what they want. I don't know if that's answering your question, and I don't know if that's the issue that you're facing doing VO, but can I ask you a question, or are these questions only one way?
Oh, you ask away.
Yeah, so do you, are these commercials? Are these imaging? Because I think it depends on the category of work that you're doing. I honestly believe that.
No, I think the first time I was in the studio and I started getting direction, I wasn't used to it. It was a turnabout for me, but I really appreciated it afterwards because of all the time that I spend at home alone, you know, having to do work. I found myself going back and listening to that director again in my head and replaying the director's advice. And it makes me better in the end. But I do remember the initial shock of going into a studio and getting direction and being on the other end of it for the first time in about 20 years.
Yeah.
It was 20 years since I had been air checked. For 20 years, I'd been telling people what to do. And then it changed. And I was like, okay. The only thing with direction now that, you know, I'll get it from clients and it's my favorite because now it makes me laugh. And I haven't figured out how to handle it still, but you mentioned it. You mentioned the word earlier. Hey, Mike, we're going to need you to be a little bit more conversational. What does that mean? What does it mean?
Non-announcer, right?
Yeah.
Non-announcer. That's what I heard for years. I remember announcers telling me, well, I'm an announcer. So then go hire a non-announcer because this is what I do. It's like, well, if you want to work, give them what they want. But see, Matt, you touched on this earlier. This is where acting comes in. So if you're not going to be an announcer, you need to act and you need to understand acting and you need to approach it as an actor, not just a former PD or in my case, a former production guy or a former jock or whatever it is from the radio aspect. You need to approach it as an actor. That's why it's voice acting. It doesn't matter if you're doing imaging. It doesn't matter if you're doing affiliate work. It doesn't matter if you're doing narration. You're telling a story. You're having to communicate something to your audience. And so that's what's important for us to embrace it as a craft and not just read it like I was doing early in my career, reading the lines, power 95. You know what I mean? Like, no, that's not going to cut it. You're not going to have any longevity in your career if you approach it, not you. Anybody, they're not going to have that longevity in their career if they don't work on versatility and evolving. And it's one great coach I've worked with in the LA area said that this creative space is not an ideal. So there is no perfect read. There is no perfect take. I mean, the producer might think so and they take it and that's great and you're done the job. But it's something we're always evolving and getting better. So for as long as you do, if you do VO, you're doing VO now. In 20 years, you're going to pick up things that you didn't do today. In 20 years, I'm going to be doing something that might be unique or different from what I can deliver today. I'll have more things in my toolbox. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And especially getting out of radio, one of the things, I think I had to spend a good solid year unlearning what I had learned in the announcer read and then going into voice acting. Because more and more, especially once we hit about 2009, the request was for people who were the opposite of that big announcer voice. And I got a big voice. you know, the more demos I put out like that didn't serve me well. But then when I started to develop some characters that were a little bit younger, I started to get younger jobs. And, you know, you're not classic rock. You're adult contemporary, my friend, and you're going to be the voice next to Michael Bolton, you know, till the cows come home.
Yeah.
And so once I began to get sort of the announcer radio part off me, that's when things started to change. So it's, to that, to what you were saying, it does evolve.
Yeah. We never learn that in radio. I mean, PDs are, they have a job to do. They air check you, and you've done this for years. You know this better than I do. You've sat in on more air check meetings than I have. And PDs have to coach talent. They have to make sure that the jocks deliver what they need to deliver. They need to make sure they speak in a certain way. And there is some coaching there, but I don't think PDs have time to teach articulation and cadence and all those things that an acting teacher is going to teach. They don't have time for that. Like, PDs are in meetings and they're busy. They're on the phone. They're meeting with the GM. They're doing budgets. They're doing those things. And then half the time they're pulling an air shift, depending on, you know, the market size. And so they don't have time for that stuff. And so that's why I think, as radio people, with the exception of Jamie, because Jamie's just this natural talent that can't seem to be emulated. But for us radio people, it's a difficult transition to get into that non-announcer role, because we've been announcing since the beginning of time. And that's what we're conditioned to do. And what happens when actors start doing VO, they get more success more easily because they already have that understanding. They already have that craft down. They're just not on camera now. So when you hear like a Hollywood actor like John Cusack or somebody, you know, reading a car commercial, it always sounds incredible. I remember Tim Allen did these Michigan commercials, like Michigan tourism commercials, and he just did them with such ease. It didn't sound like he was working too hard, but I'll have to go find him on YouTube because I like them. They're simple, but they're just so effective. And he did a whole campaign of these Visit Michigan or Pure Michigan. I think it was called Pure Michigan was the campaign. And I just thought he was phenomenal. I was like, I got to do that. Like, I can't pull that off. I'm not Tim Allen, but actors just nail it. And I think as broadcasters, we have a harder time learning that because it's almost like we're taking on a second craft. You know what I mean?
I think of John Hamm doing the Mercedes commercials, and I really like Josh Lucas doing the Home Depot ones.
Yeah. Like I said, man, they have that down. They've already worked with the acting coaches. They've already focused on script interpretation and cadence and articulation and all those things. All they're doing is turning off the cameras, but they're doing the same thing. It's so much different from doing a break after a music sweep. It's night and day. Because as radio people, we're announcers. Other than a morning show where there's conversation and maybe like an afternoon drive show where there's, you know, like a two-team show or whatever, like a two-person show where there's interaction, you're doing like a midday show or you're doing a night show and you're by yourself. Unless you're interacting with callers, you're going to be more of an announcer. That's just how radio people talk. There's nothing wrong with it. That's the craft, right?
Yeah, I think with radio, the goal is to know yourself. The better you know yourself, the bigger the personality you'll be. Voice acting is the opposite, where you have to assume the role in the script that is given to you. They are polar opposites, and that's why it's hard for radio people to do voice acting and vice versa.
Yeah, I agree with you, but it's interesting that you say that because one of the coaches that I've worked with actually encourages you to bring your own experiences into your roles. And so it's almost counterintuitive to what you're describing, and it's difficult and it requires practice and concentration. But we can actually take our life experiences and pour them into a script. So if there's if you and I get a script where there requires sadness in the read, something somber, we can pull from our own experiences. Oh, I remember when I was at this funeral, or I remember when so-and-so passed away, or when this terrible thing happened. And you can, and not that you want to go relive tragedies, but you want to tap into those emotions. And sometimes when you tap into those emotions, you'll communicate that message a lot more effectively than if you just put something on. It's almost like it needs an anchor in reality. And that's why we have to be, as actors, comfortable with ourselves.
Why did you move to Arizona?
Well, it's beautiful. And I had a friend here, actually Tuchek. So Tuchek was here. He'd lived here for 5 years already. And when my wife and I were realizing the LA thing wasn't really for us at that time, Tuchek lived here. He moved out of state and ended up coming back. And he was like, why don't you check out Arizona? And I was like, okay. I mean, it's just down the I-10. It's 6 hours away. I'll hop over for a weekend. I'll find some realtors online. And I'll try and view some homes. And when I was looking at LA home prices, now today's, at the time of this podcast, it's completely different. I mean, the cost of homes here is escalating rapidly. But at that time, that would have been 2016, early 2016, you could get a home for a third of the price that you could get a home in California, anywhere in state, not even LA or San Francisco, but anywhere. It was just so expensive there. And I came out here. I'd already been here before. I visited, do you know Rick Allen?
Why do I know this name?
Rick Allen Creative. He did like ABC Radio.
Yes.
Imaging libraries like forever. He made like some of the coolest libraries in history. I worked with him. I actually helped him with those libraries back in the day, back before I knew you. But Rick had lived here too. And so I'd visited Scottsdale, man, it would have been like 2005, I think. And it was the first time I'd ever been down this way. And I mean, I loved it. It was beautiful. You've been here. It's a nice place to live. And so my wife and I were like, hey, LA's not working. It's either going to be Arizona or we're just going to go home. Maryland was on our radar too, because we have some family there, but it was kind of a third option at that point. So I came out here on a weekend. I brought my son with me. We stayed at Tuchek's place, Dan and his wife. He's got an amazing wife. She's awesome. And we stayed there and just went and looked at homes. And Dan drove around with us and we checked stuff out. And I did FaceTime and showed my wife different places. And there were some beautiful homes. And I remember, again, at that time, it's different now, but at that time, I remember getting like the one sheet from the realtor. And I was looking at this like 3,600 square foot house that was just gorgeous. It was all open and, you know, skylights and marbled, like granite countertops and just the whole nine yards, nice hardwood floors. And I remember looking at the price of the house and I showed it to my wife and she's like, really? Like, that's the price of it? Like, I don't understand. Like, shouldn't there be another zero on that? Because we're in LA for the last year looking at crazy home prices, like just insane. And so the cost of living was significantly lower at that time. So we got into the market at a good time because now a lot of the homes in the valley have doubled here. So it's more expensive, but it was cost effective at the time. There's still sunshine, a little bit of heat in the summer. You know, it can get to certain people. Have you ever been here in August?
No, but I was going to ask you, I say, like, what are some of the advantages of living in Arizona? Because I can certainly not imagine that it would be June, July, and August.
No, that's the time you leave.
Yeah, like you have to be, you got to get your run done at about 5 a.m. There's rattlesnakes to deal with.
You don't really see those in the city. So it depends where you live. Like some people who live on the outskirts, they deal more with wildlife for sure. There's rattlesnakes. There's javelinas. Have you ever seen those crazy, ugly, they're pig-like things?
No.
You can Google it. Javelinas with a J. They look like a mix between an aardvark and a pig. And they're out at dusk and dawn. They're ugly and they're vicious. They're probably the size of a medium-sized dog, but they have teeth. I think they have claws. I don't know. They're dangerous. They're scared of humans, but if they feel they're young or threatened, they'll go after you. And they actually have like warnings in parks. So yeah, there's those things to contend with too. I've only seen them a couple of times, but they're around. I know people that live in complexes. They have these really nice, I never saw these before back in Ontario, but they have these really nice apartment complexes that people rent and they're gated. This was what we lived in LA. And the hallways are like outside. So like you leave your place and, you know, it's all exposed to the elements because the elements are, they can tolerate that. I don't think you'd do that if it was snowing all the time. And so I know some people that lived in one of these nice complexes just on the eastern tip of Scottsdale, like near the city edge. And like javelinas would roam around like in the parking lot and stuff. Like that's scary. So those things are scary. I haven't seen a rattlesnake. I think where we live, it's a little more urbanized. So some of that's out there. We have coyotes, but I mean, we had coyotes in Ontario. So my wife saw a coyote the other day. I don't like those things. I don't like those things. I actually carry pepper spray when I go for a walk because I don't want those things jumping at me. Those things are wild animals. I don't like them.
I have seen some coyotes up in Desert Ridge. I was driving down the highway and I saw one. And I'm trying to think where it was that I go walking, climb up something nearby up in Desert Ridge. I'm just trying to remember what it's called.
Is it like a hill?
Yeah. Oh, Pinnacle Peak. So I'll head over to Pinnacle Peak and try to avoid any wildlife, but I haven't seen too much because I go during the sane months of like February and March.
Yeah. But I think coyotes, they're not out. I don't see them as much in the summer months. So I don't know if they migrate where it's cooler or what. I don't know what coyotes do, but yeah, there's definitely the wildlife aspect that you have to contend with that I wasn't used to. And you know what's weird in the LA area? You know, they have mountain lions.
Yeah, no, I've seen a few of those. And listen, I don't want to talk. I'm in Winnipeg. I've got coyotes here. So the coyotes are only a problem when they're playing the Jets.
I hear that. I remember I was actually nervous about walking the trails in the LA area where we lived because they had warnings of these cats, mountain lions, and they're big. I remember the principal of my son's school who had lived there all his life said, you can't outrun those things. They can jump anything. They can get to anything. They're like ninjas. You can't get away from them. And they're big and they're actually very predatorial. So if you're walking on a trail, the signs would say you have to keep looking over your shoulder because they're traditionally afraid of people, but they could come after you. And because it's a big cat, I was afraid to walk the trails.
Don't worry. I'm not moving to California. You only have to do the sell job on Arizona to me. So,
well, he sounds like you're sold on it anyway from our conversations.
You know, I was lined up to go down for like a couple months of the year just as a temporary place. And then the pandemic hit. And now I can't go at all. But I'm looking to come down in February and I want to get together again with you and see you. So
absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So we'll get together and thanks for doing this podcast chat today.
For sure, dude.
We'll pick it up again when we'll do dinner.
Yeah, I could do dinner. You know, there's a keg. There's a keg in Desert Ridge. Do you know that?
Yeah, and kind of worries me.
Why?
I don't even go to the keg in Winnipeg.
I haven't been to the keg in a long time, but it's there for the Canadians. It has to be. There's so many Canadians here.
I know, but that's awful. You see, when I go to Scottsdale, I want to go to the Spotted Donkey and have Mexican food.
I hear you.
Do you know what the Mexican food is like in North Dakota all the way to Montana and Washington State? It's horrible.
You know, I never thought of that. Yeah, if you want to be out of your elements, I guess I'm thinking like that vacationer who goes to the islands, but wants his typical fast food and not taste the food of the islands, right? Is that what I'm sort of implying by telling you to go to the keg?
I want to get as far away from Earl's and Kelsey's and all that crap. I'll voice the ads. I'm not going to eat at your restaurant.
That's fair. Well, we'll find something, man. We'll find something.
Oh, I have it all scouted out. Trust me.
All right, cool.
Believe me, when I go away, I line up the food and I can't remember the name of the modern, barbecue that's down on Shea Boulevard, but I've got that one lined up and, I found a place that had Mexican and Chinese food together. It was quick takeaway. Sometimes I go into Phoenix and, authentic Mexican food. By the way, I'm going to list all these places in the show notes of the episode. So. Anybody can find out where this is, but this is what I do. I go and I find the cuisine and I'll eat it because I'm from Winnipeg. There's a lot of white people here and whitey can't cook.
White people and their cooking. I know.
It's horrible. Like
it is. It is. No seasoning, man. No seasoning. I love my mom. I love my mom, but my parents, Polish background, like salt. You're lucky if you get like a little pepper, like just nothing. Am I right?
Yes, you're exactly right. But why is it that these, you know, white British countries built their empires on trading spices and then don't use any of it in their cooking?
That's a great question. That's a great question. See, my wife is of West Indian background, so it's all spices, man. Like, she's like refilling the cayenne like weekly because she's spicing everything and it's delicious. And I'll be like, this is so good. And she'll just look at me like, well, because you guys never seasoned anything. That's the conversation in our home all the time.
Well, it's just literally all spice.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I don't get it.
We'll have a decent meal down by your place in February.
I look forward to it, Matt.
Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
You bet, man. Thank you. It was fun.
The Sound Off Podcast is written and hosted by Matt Kundle. Produced by Evan Serminski. Social media by Courtney Krebsbach. Another great creation from the Sound Off Media Company. Imaging courtesy Core Image Studios. There's always more at soundoffpodcast.com.
You looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.